With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect for breakfast. Like, buy a sausage burrito and add a sausage McMuffin for a dollar. Get more than you expect with new McValue at McDonald's.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back to The Exchange Live. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to stock market expert Richard Crowe, alias Cockney Rebel. So welcome, Richard.
Paul, nice to see you.
No, it's terrific to have you back on the show, not least given all the sort of volatility with the Trump trade tariffs, Ukraine, we've got Gaza and all the sort of flip-flopping between the sort of like the tax initiatives as well by Rachel Reeves. So putting all that uncertainty together, what's your sort of like your cloudy outlook for the rest of the year for equities?
Tough, isn't it? I think you've got to shop around. You've definitely got to be in the right sectors and make sure you're in the right places. You know, if you're buying an index, you're probably not doing the right wisest thing, I don't think. And there's so many sectors that aren't very good and a few sectors that are. And it's managing to get into the right sectors at the right time and knowing when to get out as well. So not easy, but there's money to be made still. So as long as you can keep making money through times like this when it gets easier, then you can sit back and put your feet up, can't you?
Yeah.
But no. for now, yeah. Tore all my hair out, so there's no more hair to tear out. So you carry on.
Yeah. Well, when we chatted last time, or I think it was two times ago, you had a really big position in cash, which was about 80%. I think you touched it down to about 25%. Where are you currently in sort of that split between how much you've invested capital versus how much you've still got on the sidelines?
I'm about 25% cash now, as it happens. So it's fluctuated a bit. I've gone back up to 100%. I've come down a little bit, and there'll be bits and pieces where usually through trading. So a lot of my cash moves about. I do a little bit of trading during the time, make a bit of money, lose a bit of money. It just passes time. I don't seem to make it balances out, and I just seem to make a tiny little bit for a lot of effort. But they're boredom trades, and you see little things come along. You think, oh yeah, that'd be quite handy. And if you hang on to them too long and don't trade quick enough, or you don't get out quick enough. So, yeah, I'm about 25% cash and 75% invested roughly at the moment.
Yeah. How's the portfolio been doing, say, over the last 12 months? I mean, you had a terrific 2024, I believe.
Yeah, fantastic year.
Yeah, go on.
Fantastic year last year. That was fantastic, I think. I can't remember what it was now, about 80. I think I came out of the end just over 80% up on the year. So that was like a fantastic year. But because I had a lot in Rolls Royce, a lot in Marks and Spencers, and they were two absolute stars. And I caught a couple of others that were good as well. But I was very heavily invested. I think that the two of those shares made up about 45% of my portfolio at one point. So that was good. But retailers now, I don't think that's the other place to be at the moment. So I've sold all my retailers, all my everything, UK retail. I was looking on, I went through the charts last week, and I can only see three retail charts that are in a positive direction. And that's Marks and Spencer's, Tesco's, and Currys. The rest of them are all in downtrends. Next, it's sort of trended down since last October, but it's, you could call it up or downtrend on there, but I think the other three are the only three that charts are in a positive mood. The rest of them are all on the way down. So, you're running against the tide. in that sector. So I cashed in the last of my retail stocks last week, including Card. I've still got a tiny small amount of Car Factory, in all honesty. But just to keep them on the screen. But in all honesty, I can't see the positivity for retailers going forward. You've got the budget coming up in April.
And so, it's the 26th of March, 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, sorry, 26th of March. Yeah, so the changes are from April. And so you've got, you know, the living wage is going up at that point. The national insurance is going up. You've got retailers, pubs and bars, they've got this discount on their business rates at the moment. And they're 70% discount, I think it is, which is going to drop to 40%. So that's a rise for people in pubs and bars as well. And then... what's the other thing that's going on? There's about four things in total that's all going to hit retailers on that one, you know, in April. And I sit there and I think, crikey, you know, I don't think people are really prepared for that and what that's going to actually do to the retail sector when it all you know, it's the fan. So can't see a lot of positivity there for retailers at the moment. So that's the reason I sort of moved out of retailers and I went all heavy into defense stocks, not defensive stocks, but defense stocks over the past, few weeks. Got in quite heavily last week and the week before. And so a big chunk of my portfolio is now BAE Systems, Babcock, Avon, Rolls-Royce. And so...
Let's go and let's dip into that, the one because you mentioned it a couple of times, Rolls-Royce. I know you've talked about it. It's that rock star CEO, isn't it, who's done a fantastic job.
Turbo 2 fans.
And it's sort of like it's obviously recovered fantastically. But when do you sort of like decide to sort of like take profits or sort of like come out of the position in terms of valuation? Because I think I was just looking at the PE and it's at about 35 times current year PE. But how do you see it anyway?
I think the cash flow is quite important there, and they're doing buybacks and, you know, how high that cash is going to go. And then there's probably going to be their debt rating is probably going to improve as well. So that will be good for them as well. But, you know, they said their results are 2 years out of forecast where they were, where they expected to be. So, you know, that got the market excited a lot again. I actually sold out at about £6. You know, I thought that was as far as they're going. The chart looked a bit toppy. And then they come out with the last set of results. And I just thought, blimey, you know, they are flying and everything's working in their favour because on top of all, you know, they've got the aero engines and they do the turbines and everything and they're down the line, they're going to have these small modular reactors, which is another great thing. But because all these defence things kicked off and aero engines, I think the Eurofighter's engine is based on Rolls-Royce engine. So everything he touches turns to gold. He's got the Midas factor, too, fan. So,
it's like you. It's like you, Richard.
Well, I don't know. So, but the thing is, like I was reading, you know, Trump's kicked off and he said that Europe's got to spend 3% on defence, you know, and he's edging about, he's sort of toying without NATO and sort of like trying to. The Europe needed a kick up the backside, really. They've sat there under the shelter of the US for ages. They're grown up, big grown up kids now. They have to start spending their own money on defence. And so he sort of like told them 3% you've got to spend on defence when they pay 2%. And I'm sat there thinking, well, if he was to pull out of NATO or just leave Europe on its own, they would then have to spend at least 3% to defend themselves. So one way or another, their defence spend has got to go up from 2% to 3% at least. And I think that's a 50% rise in European defence spending. And, you know, Rolls-Royce is in a great position there anyway with everything else. And now they've got this come along. You know, it's just in a fantastic place. Broker forecast coming out, you know, for £10 a share price and stuff like that. And you sort of think, well, yeah, I can see it. And when you watch the reactions to the shares when they've come out with their results, you know, you've got a big jump up. Today's the first pullback on since they put out the results. And that's gone up from, what is that there? That's £6 to £8. So that's like a 30% jump in the share price without a pullback. Now, I always say, when you see a big rise like that, a solid rise like that, you want to buy that first pullback on the chart because there's loads of people out there waiting to buy on the dip. And they've waited and seen it go up 30% while they've waited. And they're desperate to get their big funds or all sorts desperate again. So usually from that first little pullback, you often see another big jump. So, you know, I'll I bought back straight in after the results, and I've held on, I've added, and it's become a decent position again for me now. I think it's, what is it now? It must be that it's probably nearly 20% holding now of my portfolio. Wow. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's you said it was flying, which is clearly is. It looks like more of a rocket ship, this one. I mean, that's 10, yeah. That's 10 bag, doesn't it? If it's over, if it's £7.80 or 90,
yeah, and it's what,
down about 70p in start of 2023.
30 months. It's more than 10 bag in 30 months. This is a FTSE 100 stock. Yeah. You know, it's gone from FTSE 250. It's now about the sixth largest company in the FTSE 100. Yeah, which is like crazy. You know, I remember Jim Slater saying, fleas jump, elephants don't. Well, this is an elephant that's grown wings. It must be Dumbo or something. But that this is an elephant that does jump. Fantastic. Yeah. So, British, so that's good.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, and it's say defence and aerospace. One question I would have is that 60% of its profits come from air miles. Commercial air miles, so not defense. Yeah. It's basically you've sold an engine and then you do the repair, overhaul, and maintenance on it going forward. And then they charge it on a per fly mile, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we've got peak travel at the moment, and that's a big assumption, but a large 60% or a large chunk of its profits are largely tied to a cyclical tourist industry. Because it's commercial aerospace jets in basically this way. So my take is that you can understand how it's done so well as we've come out of the pandemic and everybody wants to go overseas holidays. But if you ever see a softness of that, 50% or 60% of their profits is dependent or reliant on air miles. Now I know you travel a lot, Richard, but I'm a bit more hesitant than you. So how do you see that risk? How do you see that risk?
I'm not a flyer. I'm definitely not a flyer. I hate planes, you know, but I do see your point. But there's a lot of these airlines have replacement cycles, didn't they, that have to come through. And I'll sit there and I'll watch. And I think that the air price, the share price of a lot of these airlines is low because of the replacement cycle. And I've been watching, was it Jet 2, people saying, oh, you know, like the PE is ever so low and that. But I think they've got a ton of cash, but all that cash will end up, you know, replacing planes, so it's not much use to shareholders, that cash. But Rolls-Royce get an awful lot of that, and they only actually focus on the long-haul planes, don't they? They don't, these short-haul planes. Right. Yeah. But they were talking about going into the short-haul planes, so there's a big market there for them, the short-haul. If they want more commercial business, you know, and commercial flight business, they could move into short-haul planes as well. And I know you did say too, fans said they were looking at, a short haul engine that for the future. So I think if you know the cycle of holidays and you know commercial airline was to peak, there's always that opportunity for them to get into more short haul planes and increase their market share there. And once these modular reactors start, you know we're gonna have to. Can't keep sticking solar panels in the middle of the field and, sort of wind turbines everywhere and think that's the cure to energy. You know, so what's the point? You destroy the countryside, you know. So, okay for these people in London. You know, they don't understand countryside. Now, most people in London think a woodpecker is a intimate prosthetic device for a man. It's, it's not. A woodpecker is a bird that flies around and sort of stuff. And your countryside is to enjoy. It's great having green energy, but you go out in the countryside and everywhere sort of looks like it's being industrialised. And taking over farms and food security and everything else. So this can't last. And I think the government's finally realised this now. You know, I think Ed Miliband's days are numbered and it seems like the government suddenly changed its plan. It likes going into wars now and it likes sort of like getting rid of civil service. They're getting rid of some of the civil service now and then they're going to start reducing benefits. It could almost be a Tory government. You sat there thinking, well, you know, in the end, they'll come around the same sort of view that they have to do the same sort of things. It's just how do you butter it up and how do you package it and make it sell it to your voters?
Yeah.
So,
no,
you know,
I mean,
reality is dawning, I think. And I think there's a lot of scope for Rolls-Royce and a lot of, you know, to expand their defence side and, you know, the industrial side as well, yeah, and turbines and SMEs and SMR, small to medium reactors. And I think they've still got a lot of space there. So,
okay. We're really well done on that one. Let's move to another one on the defence. We've got Avon Technologies. I know you've talked about it a few times. It does sort of rebreathers and sort of helmets for the US military. Went through a lot of problems recently, but again, the shares have done exceptionally well.
Yeah, and I think I'd say about this one, you know, if people are buying defence stocks and you've got a conscience about, you know, owning things that, like a company that makes weapons and everything, this is a defence stock that's pure defence because they just make, like you say, helmets, masks and rebreathers. So there's no offensive equipment in there. So they don't go around making stuff that kill people. And so it's a genuine defence stock, and it's for people who want defence stocks with a, and they've got a conscience about what they're investing in. It's a very good company, I think. And just won a $16 billion order for Wendy's, their helmets, a couple of weeks ago. And there was also it's one of these ongoing contracts that was called up by the United States. So it was about, $39 billion contract that they haven't RNS'd. It came out on the US defense spend, but there was no RNS about it, I presume, because it's a continuous part of this long-term contract that's the Army calls off so many helmets and they just make them and they're sort of expecting it every 6 months or so. So I don't think they made a big deal about it, but they've got, you know, plenty of business coming through. They sound like they're very positive. And when you look at the long-term earnings chart, it's going really well. So,
I just hope on that US contract that they've negotiated a clause that if they do get hit by tariffs, i.e. importing from the UK into the US, then the US DOD will pick up that one, because that would be a bit mean otherwise.
I think they're all made out in the US, I think, so they're all right.
Oh, okay.
So they've got a Pennsylvania and where their factory and Texas somewhere. I think they're all right in that count there. So.
Okay, good. Okay, we've got lots of questions coming in. If anybody wants to put them any more, put them onto the chat bottom. Last, Richard. We've got one from Fredo300. It's probably a stock you're not familiar with too much. Is ITV the commercial broadcaster, Richard? It basically it's got three parts to it. It's got the broadcasting, which is the linear advertising. It's got the digital ITVX, and also the very successful studios, which came out for a tremendous time when we were all locked down, but had a bit of a sort of, it's a bit slowed down a bit. But anyway, what are your thoughts on ITV?
Yeah, I saw them this week, and they look good results to me. I thought the woman, she was the CEO there is, she came from EasyJet. I've forgotten her name. Amy Holmes calls her Dame EasyJet. And she rubbed them all up the wall at one point there at ITV, I think, and he left and a few left. But recently, the charts look good. And the valuation isn't tough. And Liberty Media, Liberty Media still got about 20% they bought ages ago, and they've been sat on that. So the ITV's always looked like a company that was waiting for a big US company to come in and take them out at some point. And when would you get taken out? Probably when you just get your act together. That's when they like to come and have you. You've done all the heavy lifting, and then you get taken out. So I almost was tempted to buy some of these last week. I thought it was quite a good. I keep looking at these larger companies. I've always dabbled in small caps, but it seems that all these larger cap companies keep jumping out in front of me and saying, come and buy me. So I think it's a pretty decent hold from here. You know, I would think.
I think it's on a PE of less than 10, and I believe it's got a good attraction. It's got about 5% yield. All I would say, Fredo, is have a look at the podcast I did with Paul Scott on Friday, because he's just bought some. So he'll tell you the investment thesis. That's it's worth a look up. Just on that media theme, I know the one you quite like actually is Audio Boom, which basically in line with its ticker has really gone to the moon. Fantastic. You'll take us through this one, because it's a challenger podcast service that really does seem to have turned around of late.
Yeah, they're like It's almost like an old radio, what we would have had as a radio station. You know, they find people to advertise on there. They provide, they get the content, they play the content, they find the advertiser, they find the companies that want to advertise on there, and they create a business out of it. And they've had four upgrades in the last, they probably about 4 months. It's been a, you know, absolutely fantastic few months for them. And they put out their results. Forecasts have been raised significantly. And I watched the presentation, and they were saying that they did this, that even while the sales were down, 16 million, the 16 million of it was caused by Apple changed their the algorithm, or the way their music is delivered across their system. It didn't just affect them, it affected all companies involved with podcasts. But this 16 million, they were down, and they still managed to do that well with that drop in sales. So I was listening to the CEO on there, and he was saying that they're now going to go, I don't think many people have picked up on this, but they're now going to go into video as well. And so I don't know, video podcasts on like YouTube, or what do they call them, webcasts, or whatever they call them when they're done on video. And he's, the way he spoke, he said he expects that the video side of things to make up that 16 million pretty quick. And so, and they're going to mention it at the forthcoming results. They're going into more detail at the forthcoming results. So I'm thinking they're picking up a hell of a lot of business. Sales growth growing ever so quick. The margins, they've got this thing, it's called Showcase, isn't it? I think their best one. They've got three platforms from which they sell advertising to companies. And there's like a bog standard one, I suppose, takes a lot of work. The margins are 10%. There's the premium one, which I suppose takes less work, and the margins are 15%. The Showcase is nearly all automated. So advertising agencies can just go on the showcase. Oh, we've got a company here that wants advertising, it wants to hit this, and this. And it's all done online, and the software throws up, you know, these podcasters at this time, blah, blah, blah. And it involves very little work from you. So the margins there are 30%. And that this part of the business is absolutely screaming away. Yeah. So, you know, the margins are going to increase by the look of things quite well. The sector's growing at 22%. And they expect to outgrow the sector. So we're talking about, I was looking at it the other day, and they've got to be growing 20, 28%, 30% growth they're expecting this year. And further going forward, because the sector's forecast to consistently grow at 22% plus for the next sort of few years, and they expect to outgrow that. And they're the fourth largest podcaster in the US. I think they're saying like the third largest podcaster in Australia, something like the sixth in the UK. But they are right up there at the top of podcasters, and you know the pace. Well, they now, they're trading at £6. They were trading at £28 not long ago. And they're going to have a record year this year, they say. So they're at a quarter of where they were in share price terms, and they're going to have their record year.
How does their relationship work with Spotify and Apple, though? Do they pay distribution, presumably, costs?
Yeah, I think so, because their podcasts go out on Spotify and, you know, sort of groups like that. And I'm not quite sure what the split is or how the revenue split, but I think they take it's about $7 in every 1,000 podcasts that get sold, the way it averages out at. So I presume in ones that go out to like Spotify, they probably don't make as much money from those, but there'd be other places where they make more money, but that's the average. So I presume they split the revenue partly with Spotify somehow. But I don't think it's not like competing against Spotify. Spotify is, you know, you're doing something and people can actually access it via Spotify, as well as everywhere where there's an audience, they'll send their podcasts. So I presume they're getting income from all different places that do podcasts. So, yeah.
I guess the one danger which investors should think about, and it isn't, because at the moment it's symbiotic, it works for Spotify and it works for Audio Boom, but would be if, because of Spotify's dominance, if it decided to hike its prices or hike its share of that revenue, then, you know, basically they'd probably have little negotiating power against them, because if they took Spotify off their distribution, then their advertisers, audio booms, advertise their revenue. They would just say, look, if it's not on Spotify, we're not interested. I don't know anyway.
I don't know how much that is. I don't know how much Spotify is of their actual revenues, but I think they probably have to treat all companies the same. And Spotify would
lose.
They'd just bomb audio boom out, and they wouldn't treat other audio. I don't even know, would that be legal out in the US to do that to one company, pick one company out and do that? I don't know whether
Just look at how many times Google changes its algorithm. I mean, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, we've got another question. We've got a question coming from Grant. He's asking about on the beach. He says, when we discussed R&R, I mentioned peak air travel, but what's your thoughts on the beach? It's now pretty cheap, actually, but done really well. We've had a bit of a boom because we've had terrible summers the last 2 years. We've had another boom in bookings for the summer, haven't we? But anyway, what's your view on this online travel agent?
Yeah, I like on the beach. They've got new guys in there that have been running it for the last couple of years, and they've delivered. Whereas previously the old boss didn't deliver. You know, there's all these promises, and they've actually delivered. And I think the real worry with it was that, you know, people are booking late. Yeah. You know, that's the new holiday thing now, is to book right at the last minute. And I think the share price came off because people were surprised that the company said, "Oh, we're up." You know, sales are up like 10%. On last year, and then people are thinking they should be up much more than that if they're going to hit their numbers. But bookings are coming later. Jet2 have said, you know, bookings go. I think that's the way people are starting to get used to booking stuff now. You know, you wait to the last minute and you get a better deal, and you've got quite a decent choice. Yeah. You know, people are quite happy to. It's not like you book at the last minute. You think, oh, I ain't going to get a flight, or I'm not going to get a holiday if I wait to the last minute. You've got a big range out there now. And I also think people have changed their attitude to life since COVID. Holidays have become a higher priority than cars. You know, like I look at car sales going down. Who buys a car today? I look at electric cars and I see like a square box and they all look the same. Mm. And for years, cars have started looking the same. Everything looks like a Vauxhall Astra to me when I drive up the road. You know, I look at that and say, what's that? It's silver. It's red. What is it? And I have to get right up and see what. When I was back in the olden days, when I was in the 70s and 80s, you bought a car, even up to the millennium, you bought a car you desired. Car makers made a car that looked really good, and it was different to everybody else's car, and you looked at it and thought, I've got to have one of those. You know, I've got to show off. I've got to park that in my driveway. Like all the neighbours look envious. You go in the driveway now, everybody's got the same looking car. And what's the incident? You know, you want, if you've got plenty of money and you're buying a Lamborghini or something, you get that. You still get that. You get that personalised car. But for the average guy that used to buy a Volkswagen Beetle because it was fun, or for someone who bought a Mini or stuff like that, you don't get that today. So people are just not incentivized to buy cars, for EVs, because they're, you know, they're not the ideal. They're not what they've cracked up to be, I don't think. And B, there's just no style or, you know, passion in a car anymore. So, I've had the Porsches, I've had the BMWs, I've had the lot, and I used to love cars. I'd go and look on a car forecourt now, and it's just a line of black, grey, silver boxes, and they all look the same. I just think, no, it doesn't even appeal to me. So, I can see our holidays appeal to people more, and COVID changed people. You know, we've had a complete change in society since. A lot of people don't even go out to work anymore. They just stay at home. Mm-hmm. Other people do work from home. They probably don't need cars so much, but they probably sat there. They're not mixing with people so much. So on holiday is a time to, if you've been at home and you haven't coerced, you know, been conversing with people in an actual office, and, you know, that gregarious sort of thing that we've got where you all talk to people and socialise, you're stuck at home and you're not socialising. So your holiday becomes the point where you actually do get to socialise with people, and probably feels a much more special thing now if people are working from home.
Yeah.
That's my theory anyway.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. And it's pretty cheap. It trades at just over 12 times PE. Got a very strong balance sheet, and the demand is very good. And I guess you won't be buying a Tesla Cybertruck anytime soon if you've seen one of those.
Everything looks like a Mars bar on wheels to me. They're just wrapped in a different colour. They bought out a full full Capri. I had a full Capri back in the 70s, and they've just brought out a new full Capri. It's literally a box, and it looks like any other box.
Somehow it doesn't surprise me you bought a Ford Capri. That was out of the professionals, wasn't it? That was Bodie and Doyle days, I believe.
Yeah, same time, I had that. Yeah, I had that Ford Capri.
Okay, another stock you've done terrifically, and I mean, you know, I've got to tip my hat here, Richard, because your portfolio, I mean, 80% up last year, but over the long term, you've done terrifically. Another one you've done really well is Filtronic, which is it basically does sort of like wireless communications devices, particularly sort of like amplifiers for base stations for Starlink and SpaceX, and it did nothing for 20 years and has just started, it's just flown sort of like the last 12 months really strongly. Yeah. So after sort of seeing such a strong move, what's your sort of outlook now for the business?
Yeah, I think it's still one that you've got to hold there, and you just got to be there and wait for it to go again, because, you know, look, Elon Musk has come along with his satellites, and what actually happened was they always made for antennas for mobile phones, because the market for that just collapsed after a few years. And they've used this RF technology. Well, the guy that started Filtronic is sort of like the world, you know, boffin on RF technology. And this company is the only company that can do the RF technology, which Musk needs to reduce the latency between calls. So it just basically speeds up, like you would speed up the internet. This speeds up, you know, the use on their satellites, how fast they can deliver. Because you can get Musk's Skylink here now for about 60, 70 quid as a private individual. You can have your Starlink here now in the UK.
Yeah.
You can't get it because they're only delivering it to professional businesses. So at the moment, because there's so much demand. So you pay about treble that for if you're a business. But the thing is, you know, they've been going great. Their forecasts keep getting boosted, but next year's forecasts are currently lower than this year's by quite some way. Yeah. And everybody keeps saying to me, why are the forecasts lower? And Lawrence Olsen, I think he said the same thing. It might have been Richard Stavely
it was,
he was saying, you know, that he could see that the forecasts just don't match with what's actually going on there. And I've got a couple of theories on it. I think possibly when you get into this sort of tech, it's very commercially secret. And does Musk really want Filtronic saying, oh, we're going to be doing loads of stuff next year, and letting the forecast go this early and give away the game that, you know, how well Starlink's doing or what they're actually doing? So I wonder whether it's commercially sensitive to put too much into the public domain now on what they expect. Maybe they can't actually physically say at the moment because they don't know how big the order is going to be and it isn't guaranteed. But they've doubled their capacity to just built a new state-of-the-art factory to double their capacity. And they've opened an office down in Cambridge, science office down in Cambridge. And I'm thinking, well, do you really double your capacity if your earnings are going to drop off next year? Maybe there's some, you know, capital costs in there that are part of the reason for that. But if you're doubling your capacity, you don't do that lightly, I don't think. And one of the things I don't know if everyone's thought about is Apple has already got the software on its phone to be able to do calls direct to satellite. And I wonder how long it'll be before Musk is actually doing it direct to mobile phone. If it's already, the software's already there to go direct from his Starlink to Apple phones, how long before he's the next O2 and the next EE and everything else, and you're using a satellite. So I think I've got O2 here. I'll open my phone. It works in the office. I go out on the driveway. It doesn't. If it's satellite, you'd have connection wherever you went. So it'd be so much better as long as they've got the speed. And these little RF devices that they use, I think they're used on the base stations at the moment. If they have to go into all the satellites and the base stations and everywhere else, and we go in, it goes by a mobile phone, and they've got to get the speed up as fast as they can. Musk took 10% in warrants in the business, so that he's got 10% there. It's a vertically integrated company. Is he going to come in eventually at some point and just buy Filtronic as well? You don't know. Yeah. So there's so much good down the line that could come along, that the chart's just recently broken out to about he's at about a 20-year high now.
Yeah.
And you've got to go back quite a way to see where it goes. It just goes up vertical. But it's an actual bowl. It's an actual long-time bowl, about 20 years when you look at it. I sit there some nights and I think, crikey, if that got back to where it was 25 years ago, we would be actually, you see.
Wow, God, yes, what you mean. The 2000, it was 20 quid.
Yeah. So it's
you raise an interesting point. Well, a couple of lots of interesting points, but two in particular. One, obviously, the commercial sensitivity. I love that. I hadn't appreciated that in terms of that it doesn't. They may want to. You know, they're just basically baked in what they can see, not what they effectively, i.e., which is firm contracts, not what is actually certainly probable. Which was coming down the drop for sensitivity reasons. That's really, really good. And the other one about moving out into mobile phones, Vodafone actually has already inked a contract to launch direct satellite to mobile phones. And so, yeah, it's very, very possible that they, you know, that start all of these low Earth orbit constellations where we'll do that, no doubt about it. Okay, good.
You know, it just makes it such a crackingly exciting stock that, you know, when you look back at the chart as well and what, you know, what can happen when things really go to town and, limited amount of shares in that very small company that, you know, these sort of things.
Another one you've done really well on. We've got a question from, who was it basically? Ben Sharma is asking about CMC Markets. Another one you did really well last year on, and I think you probably banked some profits, and then you've sort of, now you may have another opportunity to sort of have a bite at the cherry, so to speak, because it has dropped off on, I think the CFO left, and they got their forecasts a bit wrong, which probably explains why he departed. But how do you see this one going forward? Because it's now come back into sort of value territory.
I was quite lucky, actually, because I bought it just on the bowl. That was just before... back before a year ago, December a year ago, when it was just just down under £1, about 98 pence. Yeah. And then, as luck would have it, I bought a little small bowl, and then a bit of news come out about they were trading better than expected. And then I probably bought money as a trade at that point, in all honesty. I didn't expect to, you know, see a sudden rise of about 20 or 30%. And at the point where I was thinking about just taking profit, they came out with another trading update and said, oh, actually, we're going to do a lot better. And there was about three of these that went on and sent it up, right up to, up to about three quid odd, was it? Did they get up to there? £3?
Yeah, they did. It was over £3. Yeah, £3.20, I think it topped out at.
And they did a thing where they've opened a place, they've opened up offices in Asia, and they're doing... like white label spread betting and,
So Revolut's one of their partners, isn't it?
That was the first customer they got. And they did say they've got another customer that they were close to doing. And he dangled the carrot, old Peter Cruddas, saying that, you know, we're close to doing it. Didn't hear no more about it. And I sat there and I thought, that's strange. And then the shares sort of like drifted off. And the next trading update was okay, but it wasn't, you know, there was no bells and whistles. And I just sort of thought, maybe this has gone as far enough for now. And I took some profits right up. I think it was around about £3 I took my profits. So I'd nearly two bagged them, I think, the first ones that I bought. And since then, they've come back. And I wonder what he was making a big noise about. Suddenly, he started saying, well, this is going to be, it won't be a fast thing. It will be, you know, like it's a, Asia will be, and our new commercial business will be, a you know slow burner type thing rather than they're all going to pile in. Everyone in Asia is going to be signing up to doing spread betting with CMC Markets, and the news out of there just actually became less exciting. So I've kept an eye on it, and then suddenly the CFO went without any real sort of notice beforehand. You like to say when a CFO goes, you like to hear 6 months before that, mate, you'll be retiring in 6 months' time, didn't you? You don't like to hear immediate effect. That's what you don't sort of want that. I sort of thought, oh no, this doesn't sound too good as well. So I just, until I hear what's going on there and they fess up and they tell us everything, I'll just sit on the sidelines for now. But it's one that I'd get back into if they smooth things out. Because he's a pretty clever old boy, Peter Cruddas. He's no fool. So
he's a bit like Cockney Rebel.
Is that right? I don't know about that.
Definitely a bit like Cutler. I mean, I don't know, reading between the lines, I know the guy left immediately. I would say they came out with a profit warning, and it was really attributable to the CFO's feet. And given Lord Crudders has got nearly 60% of the shares, he doesn't need to speak to shareholders about whether he's going to make a change. He just basically thought, right, okay, now is the time to swap out the CFOs. And I think he probably just did it because he's, you know, it's in his interest. Well, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, good.
I don't think it was sinister. I just think that, you know, it was just, he passed his sell by date probably. And it was just a matter of getting a new CFO in there.
Okay, good. We've got a question from Chris Wood. He's asking about ME Group, which I think is the old, was it a photo booth stroke? Yeah. Now the industrial laundrette type business that's seeing a lot of growth. Pretty cheap. Obviously, people are questioning about the cyclical growth, but it still keeps sort of bucking the trend. I don't know if you've had a look at this one at all, ME Group.
I've watched it for years, and it always used to seem a little bit too expensive for me when I used to look at it. And it's very volatile as well, and it behaves sort of like quite strangely. And I just always seem to be behind the curve when it's there, and it looks cheap, and then I sit and wait for ages. I never fully understand it, and I've never, you know, sometimes you get a stock that you just don't feel that you gel with.
Yeah.
And I just don't gel with this stock for some reason. But loads of people I know, you know, I think Andy Brough's got a decent holding in it. It's done great. It's done fabulous. But it's a stock that I just don't gel with the, you sit there sometimes and you watch the share drifting off, and you think, why is it drifting off so much? I can't work it out. And I start to get nervous, and I end up selling out because I just don't understand why it's doing such things. And because I don't know the business that well enough, I don't know. So I've never really warmed to it. But obviously, you know, I probably should have done years ago, back in 2000, because it's done pretty well since then, hasn't it? So,
But it's got I guess it's not your bread and butter because there's no bowl there. It's just a vertical line going from bottom left to top right.
A few little occasions where it sort of like spun a little bowl there in 2001. It sort of looked, I think I actually did buy it there for a little while for a trade. It went up and it had gone up about 15%. And I ended up thinking, well, I don't know. It just behaves strangely sometimes. And I get nervous with the strangeness, the way the share behaves. I think it's the illiquidity of it sometimes. There's not a lot of shares about. And it can make it go over the place when you get a seller in there. But washing machines, you know. I'm not going to make no misogynist remarks about washing machines at all. You know, so a laundrette is probably the place for me, but I never go to a laundrette. I have to have married somebody who's very good at washing machines.
I used to do a lot of that sort of stuff. But anyway, the chart's done really well. Well done, Chris Wood, on that one, because, you've done very well at that. Let's move to one with a bowl chart and a recovery story, because I know this is your sort of real specialism, is Carlclo, which is a sort of precision components business that I think provides components, sort of largely polymers, into the healthcare sector, into all kinds of industrial applications. Been through the woodshed over the last 5 years, and has still got quite a lot of deleveraging to do, and it's got a bit of a pension deficit, but clearly is on an upward track. So how's the bowl falling, and what's the Cotney Rebel view?
There's a bowl there at the moment again, actually. Just recently, and I was holding this, and when the last lot of results come out, I was astounded that it got sold off so much on the last lot of results, because it wasn't they weren't that bad. And in the end, I sort of like joined the gang in the end, and everyone was just selling it. It had come off so much, I just thought, I've already banked my profits. I've got a bit that I'm holding. And I sold out as well, but I kept an eye on it because they've actually got an aerospace department as well, not just the plastics. And that quite interests me at the moment. We're all with what's going on with defence and everything else. There's probably opportunities there to supply defence companies more with, they do quite specialist parts. It's not a very big business that what they've got. It's not a major part of their thing, but it could become a lot more of their business. And also just lately, the chart has just sort of like curved off and made a bottom. Well, end of the month is the end of their 6 month period. So I presume they'll probably want to come out with a trading statement somewhere towards the end of the month. And also the pension triennial is on the 25th of March. So a little while after that, maybe they can say, because they expect to get that pension down a lot from when it's revalued this time. So there could be quite a bit of positive news coming in from there if that's the case. So I actually bought a few back last week, just at the end of last week, because I thought I want to keep it on my watch list now while things are happening, just in case it starts going. But as you can see from December right away, it's got rolled right away down in a bowl shape, and it looks like it was just starting to curve back up here. So maybe there's some positive news in the market at the end of the month or just after. So still a company I like. I think if they get that pension deficit down, it becomes an old different story.
Yeah. Do you think they need to raise some more money? Because I know they've got some capex they need to spend, haven't they?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether they will need to raise any more money or not. I think there's a possibility of it, but it may be one of those things where you raise money, and it's one of those things that then moves the share price up rather than down if they raise money, because you know, people feel more secure about it then. So it could be.
I'm with you, Richard, because I think what they're planning to do is they'll come out with their pension actuarial deficit, whatever it is. They know what the number is. It's just publishing the damn thing now, I'm sure. Yeah. And therefore, they're going to raise some cash after that's publicised, because one, it'll just remove the uncertainty for sort of investors. And then then you'll basically see the CEO talking about the growth opportunity and how we're basically going to make a success of it. So I still think it's very risky as a stock, but frankly, I'm actually quite comforted that basically they haven't raised anything this side of when the triennial comes out, because that does suggest they want to do it out after that, because they think it's going to be good news. But
the pension pension news would likely give it a push, as well as, you know, make people, because it's pretty, you know, so it's quite liquid. So, you know, when everybody starts piling in, it goes bonkers. And so
that's because of you, Richard.
And the same when it comes down as well, you know, when everyone's selling, it goes bonkers as well. So it's pretty, you know, if you try to go and buy, a lot of times, not the market now, but in normal times, you go and try and buy 30,000 shares, and you make the shares tick up half a pence. So it can be, you know, it can be really tightly liquid. So, but I don't know. There's a bit of a bowl forming, and while that's there, that's a positive sign to me. So it's worth just keeping on the stock list again here. So,
I would agree. Yeah, definitely worth watching. That's for sure. Okay, we've got another question. Well, basically, Emmanuel Do Agria. He's asking about engineering in the aggregate, but one company he's talked about is Goodwin, but we've talked about that with Paul Scott a few times. And the other one is Coates, which we never talk about, which is basically a.
It's become Spoiler, didn't it?
Is it? Okay, I thought it was actually a coatings business, industrials, but is it?
Coats Viella, I think, from years ago, and like industrial coatings. So I think they used to do paints and stuff like that as well. And
it's hardening of metals. Anyway, have you had a look at this one? Yeah.
Do you know what? I've never understood the valuation on this one. It just it just always bothers me. Everyone says to me it's cheap, and I've sort of, you know, it's not a pretty chart for starters, but you know, everyone would say, and it just used to get cheaper all the time, you know, and they just used to say, and the valuation, I forget now, it was hard to work out on a PE basis, but everyone sort of said to me, I'll look at it on this basis and that basis, and I could never really see the valuation in it or understand it, so I've always sort of shied away from it.
Yeah,
but that isn't a chart I would buy, just on a chart basis. That from September last year to now, that is one ugly look to the chart there. So, but as far as charts go, I'd say no, thank you.
I would also add to that, Emmanuel, have a look at their tariff exposure, because I know they do the metal hardening and all this sort of stuff, but it all depends on where their customers are and where their customers then import it into different regions from other different regions. And if they say, for instance, if they sell a lot of hardening and coating to China, who then export those effectively semi-finished goods to America, then it's probably in the hard bucket. But that'll be my only take on it. See where their customers are exposed in terms of the tariffs. Okay, good. Let's go to one bit further up the value chain in engineering, MPAC, which is a sort of like a high-speed packaging factory automation business. They made two hugely transformational acquisitions last year. Gives them full end-to-end coverage in terms of being able to go from the right from the production line to cartoning now. How do you see this one going forward, Richard? I know we've talked about it a couple of times.
I like this company. I think they've got a lot going for them. And the recent acquisitions, they've got the automated palletizing machine, so they can just take stuff straight off the production line and whip it round on one of these things and do all the wrap and everything else on a pallet and send it straight out. So from start to finish, they're working as a company to do the whole thing, do the production line, pallet, and, you know, end-to-end stuff. The shares have come off just recently, but the broker did have it was Edison's who got up, I think it was, or the other one. Who's the other one? Equity Developments. It might be one of the two had a target of £8.50. And they've still got they're still in with Freya, the battery production line. They've not mentioned anything about it for a little while, but I noticed that Ilika or whatever, the other battery company.
Yeah, Ilika, I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, they came out the other day and said that they've met some milestones there and everything, and the share's been picking up in there, and they're sort of partially related, these two, as to the deal with Freya. So, you know, that was a positive as well. But, you know, none of the Freya's baked into their forecasts. So, at the moment, they're looking cheap. I think they're probably on a single-digit PE again now, are they?
They're just less than 10 times. Yeah, I mean, Graham Austin, he's also asking about impact. But you're right, they're dead cheap. But I think their growth is pretty fast, isn't it?
He's expecting to put 10% on sales, 10% on margins, and 20% growth throughout the time. So, and he seems to have done really well since he's been there. Adam Holland, the new CEO, seems to know what he's doing, and. So that's good. I just wonder whether maybe the little drop off at the end is down to tariffs. Maybe they're thinking about, you know, MPAC selling machines into the US, and whether that's going to be it by tariffs. So that may have spooked a few people out, but I don't know. You know, sort of will those tariffs even come in the end? He's dropped them back on Mexico and Canada, and it was President Johnson who said, talk quietly, but carry a big stick. And he sort of, Trump just doesn't do the talk quietly bit. He talks loud and carries a big stick. So it's both with him. But sometimes you've got to take what he says with a pinch of salt a bit. And he can change his mind from one day to the next, as we've seen with Ukraine. So I wouldn't place too much emphasis on the tariffs, because I think they're probably, when you look at the Chinese index, the China 50, all while this has been going on, the China 50's gone up about 6%, while the S&P's fallen about 4%. And I'm sat there thinking to myself, the markets are betting that China's going to do better out of this than America are, because, you know, you're going to stick tariffs on things, you're buying parts in, they're going to be more expensive. It's just making your own machinery at the end of the day dearer, but you're paying the tariffs yourself in little pieces by importing things from abroad. So it's just mad, but he wants to make America great again. Yeah. So Britain's great already. We don't need to make it great again.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the tariffs with MPAC specifically, it's got a good geographical spread. I think it's got a couple of facilities in America and one in Canada and maybe one in Mexico, and got some in Europe and Asia and stuff. So it won't be the direct impact, because they'll have local production for America and all that kind of stuff. But it might be, as you rightly say, if when they assemble and they bring all the parts together, and then it could be some of their earlier supply chain which do get hit by tariffs. But wait and see. Yeah. Okay, good. Let's move to another one. Let's go to animal health. We've got Ampario, which basically does sort of like natural ingredients for animals and cows, and has done really well recently, because I think a lot of their stuff has benefited from trying to prevent avian flu getting into the cow industry and stuff. How do you see this one?
Yeah, this is really quite interesting. You know, I looked at it ages ago. I just didn't like the company's name originally. Ampario, it's a horrible name. That's the only negative I've really got about it, because they do like natural animal feed additives.
Yeah.
And it'll be sort of stuff that, you know, improves animal health. It's a bit like being one, you know, when you go and buy, going to Holland and Barrett as a human, your yeah. cattle are now going to Empario, and instead of having chemicals and drugs, they're having natural ingredients to improve their health. Yeah. And, you know, I quite like that, to be honest, because, you know, I don't like having all this, the bow there that, who is it? It's Arla is sticking in all their milk as a test.
Yeah.
And, everyone was up in arms. I'm up in arms about it. I don't bovar in with it. It's just to stop cows breaking wind. I understand if, you know, an animal's got to have antibiotics and, you know, there's certain drugs they've got to have to keep them alive, then that's probably going to get into the food chain through cows. But, you know, I said to a guy, I was talking to a guy who used to do with Yo Valley and said, you know, like, he's a friend of mine who talks to him, and he said it to him, and he said, you know, what about this bovar and going into milk? And the guy from the other said, oh, yeah, but milk has loads of stuff going in it. You know, you have antibiotics. You know, that's not an excuse for putting another thing into a cow just because everybody else does it. And all it's doing is stopping animals break wind.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, who's benefiting from this? The cow was born, you know, the cow was created to basically eat grass and break wind. That's all they do. And they stop 2 days a year, once to breed and once to have a calf, and then that's it. The rest of the time, they just eat grass and break wind. So that's their natural thing to do. And I don't do really need to stop that, to try and stop a little bit of CO out of the planet. So who's benefiting? It's not the farmer. He's having to buy the stuff. It's not me because I've got something else in my milk. It's the guy selling the bovine. And, you know, and Arla will have a markup. So none of us are benefiting. It's only like Arla. And but if you got to natural products, I can understand farmers want to use this because they've got a product, I think, that stops mites and, you know, you feed it to them and it's proven it does work, it's natural. And for organic milk, you know, we buy organic milk from the local dairy near us, and they've got these lovely Jersey cows, and it's thick yellow creamy milk with thick cream on the top, and even the semi-skim comes out like double cream, so it's beautiful. But it's organic, so you know that, you know, it's not been messed about. It can have antibiotics, I think, if it's necessary, but not routinely.
Yeah.
And so it's as healthy as you're getting. Milk and stuff, your food is purity in it, and you shouldn't. I don't think you should be adding chemicals and things into food if there's a different way of doing it and it's natural. And so I think that's where Empario is going to win here, because more and more people are fed up with not knowing what's going in their food and what chemicals farmers are using and stuff like this. And so you know, they've had a great track record. They've come out with a trading update that was better than expected. The other day, and said they were ahead, and I think their results are out soon. So, you know, it looks good old John Lee as well. I think he's into them as well, apparently. And somebody else the other day said they were into them as well. So everybody was sort of like tipping them as well. And it just so happened that I bought them just before they all started tipping, luckily. So,
well done. Well, I've got some I've got some great news for you, Richard. Okay, because when I chatted to Stephen English of Stella Asset Management about 2 months ago on this one, apparently they do sell Empario, an all natural and all organic product for cows that help them reduce the amount of methane they produce. So they do actually solve that problem naturally, and it doesn't get into the food chain. So it's selling well, apparently.
Yeah. I can imagine it is, probably, you know. So, like, but I'm not sure you mean it stop cows doing this. I'm sure this is all you know. But if people are worried about it and farmers want to do their bit and they have to do their bit and show they're doing their bit, it's better to do it with something natural than a chemical, I think.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Okay, let's move to a different sector. Let's go to sort of like house building and all things student accommodation. Really interesting stock, sort of forming a bowl, I believe, is Watkin Jones, which came out of sort of like a purpose-built student accommodation, used to build it, and now has gone into build-to-rent for residential properties to help the housing market. Went through a lot of problems and has still got some legacy cladding issues, building safety issues. But it does seem to have a reasonably sound balance sheet. Anyway, how do you see this one going forward as a recovery stock?
Yeah, I bought a lot of these, and I think this could be a real cracker. You know, this one of these ones that, you know, they've done student accommodation for a long time, and they do they do build to rent.
Build to rent, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. So that they do that as well. And they also do, they've got a refurbishment side as well to them, that they're doing a bit of refurbishment business for themselves. And they've got Fresh, which is the which is the building management side of the business, I think. And then there's Refresh, which does, you know, cladding removal and stuff like that as well. So, well, they've got, I think, a net cash of about 47 million, something like that, aren't they? Yeah, and it's about aftermarket cap. That went potty from when they put out a trading update. You know, they made about 3.5 pence EPS adjusted. And then the CFO and the chairman bought a load of shares as well, each straight after they put out a trading update. And it went absolutely bananas. I think Fidelity have now up theirs to over 10% holding in it. And they're in a good position because they've got the new CFO, who the CEO credited. I watched their presentation and he sort of like credited the CFO for doing a lot of the changes that's got them to where they are. Yeah. And they're financing businesses differently. So they'll have a particular parcel of land and they go and get planning permission on it. And then they go out to someone and say, look, we've got the land. You finance the building of it, and then we share the profits at the end of it. Mm. And so from day one, a lot of time, they don't even have to use their own cash now to build these properties, and they're building some big. I saw recently they've got a couple of good contracts with, I've lost the name of it now, a London contract that they announced anyway recently. Yeah. There's a couple of bits of news that's gone through lately. I've found on the internet where they've done a few deals, and if they, you know, they could quite easily, once the cladding bit issue is sort of like resolved, and they've got a few cladding issues still to resolve with the cash that they've got, but they're not saying that they need to keep adding more cash to it now. You know, it's like it seems like they've covered their bases with how much they're probably going to have to spend now. And so it becomes a much cleaner business to look at. And buy to rent, build to rent. There's loads of companies out there that want to actually invest in rental property. And it's a matter of being able to get them a return better than the sort of 4% that they already get at the moment on that could just get on, you know, having your money in the bank. The greater return they can get on that, the more chance there is of getting these people. And they seem to be winning the business now. So. I think if interest rates come down, they'll really go. But I think if interest rates just stay where they are now, they'll still do quite well. Mm. And because the COO moved up to CEO and they've got a new CFO, and I like that when you've got a new board in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're still cheap. I mean, I know they've gone up a lot from the lows, but their net tangible book value, i.e., just their buildings, and if you had to subtract all those cladding provisions and everything, it's still set 47p. So it's another 50% up just on book value, tangible book value.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just people run scared, you know, like, so everything's sort of aimy, you know, if it's on aim, people are sort of like deadly cautious and everything else. But I just, you know, they've got, I think their month end is, I think about 6 weeks' time or 7 weeks' time, they should have another trading update maybe, you know, to say how they've done for the half year. Yeah. And I don't think the forecasts are up with events, to be honest. And having the CFO and his kids all piling in as well is a bit of comfort in the background as well. That I think this is right, and they're a changed business. And you know, I think probably they've let investors down for the last 2 years. Mm. And you know, it's always been that little bit of disappointment. And in the end, people just expect disappointment. And then suddenly, when you know you actually deliver and don't disappoint, then that's when things change. So. Oh yeah, I like this, and I think these have got a great potential. They're almost as exciting as an audio boom and Filtronic. I don't think it was, you know, they don't look exciting, but often it's the things that don't look exciting that are the most exciting.
Yeah, and also I remember speaking to the CEO a long time ago, about 4 or 5 years ago. He's a member of the family, was Mark Watkin Jones, I think his name is. Really sharp guy, probably still active on the board. Maybe, I don't know if he's still the chairman, but anyway, he's a really, really clever guy. And because they've still got a lot of shares, he's now really putting his hands on it. If he's bought some shares recently, then it's a very good sign, no doubt about it, because he's a canny lad, that guy. Really is. Yeah. Really, really bright. Okay, we've got a question from Lemon Physical. Quick one on Zote Foams, who I think I did see an announcement this morning. They're just inked a deal to put a new manufacturing facility in Asia to support the likes of Nike and all the other shoe manufacturers for their specialist foams to help people like Michael Jordan bounce up and down on the basketball court, I think. I don't know if you've had a look at they used to be a bit of a darling, but again, a bit like CMC, have come down a lot of late.
They took up because they had this product about milk cartons, didn't they? They had the yes. And when that story broke, like, and they were, they literally got manufacturing already in place and everything else, and it became, they absolutely went piling up. And I was in it on that, you know, probably to spike more or less, probably about 575, and I sold off in the dip after that because suddenly it went all quiet. And then they've had an issue of some sort, that this doesn't work how they expected it to work. Yeah. And the price at the top there was building in this new, I forgot the name of it now.
Resource, it was called. Resource. Yeah, that's Recyclable cartons. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was a way of not having to have the plastic and the cardboard. You literally, you know, didn't have to, you know, it made it recyclable and it was all going to be great. And it looked like, you know, they hit the holy grail. But obviously it doesn't look like they've got it anymore. That's tailed off and I don't know.
They've mothballed Resource, I think, because not because it didn't work. I think it's just because of the competition. There's lots of people doing, you know, next generation recyclable cartons because it's going to be a winner, but they're small in the game, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so, you know, I bought it for that, and that was the only reason I bought it. I'd never really sort of been a buyer of it before. I actually bought one of their sheets of foam, actually. It cost me a flipping fortune. It was about 110 quid for a sheet of foam. When it turned up, it was nothing like what I wanted. But it was too big to send back. And then I couldn't be bothered trying to send it back. So we kept the foam. It's finally coming handy this week. The old reason for buying Zote Foams for me was that carton thing. And they made such a big deal of it that it looked like it could have been astronomical, some of the forecasts. And obviously, it's got back to where it was now. And I think it's just a foam manufacturer deep down. They use nitrogen. And I don't think there's a busting lot of difference in their foams to other foams. You know, they get these denser foams by putting nitrogen bubbles in it instead of whatever they normally use, carbon dioxide or whatever. And they can vary the foam a lot. Yeah. But I'm not totally convinced that it's something out of this world. I think it's just a slightly different foam. And there might be one or two areas, like, you know, Nike can say they've got this special foam in there. It suits them to say that they make you jump another foot higher when you're playing basketball. And it suits Zote Foams to say that, but does it really do it? It's a bit like that, you know.
I would say Lemon Physical.
Can't prove these things.
Yeah, on the positive side, Lemon Physical, I would say, have a listen to, I've been to a couple of interviews with Paul Scott. He likes it. I think he owns Zote Foams, and it's now very cheap. I think he only trades at about low, maybe 10 to 12 times PE, plays a decent dividend, good balance sheet. Clearly, if it's just building a factory out in the States, in Asia, then it sees a lot of growth in it. And I've heard on the grapevine from Warner Brothers that Bugs Bunny uses their foam, so it does work. Okay, let's move to...
Probably is cheap now, actually. In all honesty, it probably is down at a price where it's probably good value now, and that's where you want to be buying it. But over the past, it's been, you know, sort of... I wouldn't expect a big rise like it had again, so...
Okay. Well, again, one of your expertise is spotting turnaround situations and areas and charts that are sort of like getting a firmer base. And this one is probably the world's, it's certainly at a great time. It's one of the asset managers, Lion Trust Asset Manager, was an absolute darling about 5 years ago, being hit, as they all have, by fee compression and the move to passives. And trying to differentiate. Anyway, how do you see this one going forward? Unbelievably cheap. I mean, just top level, we've got 17% dividend yield, PE of 6.
The last presentation I watched with the directors, they were confident they could pay that dividend for the next 18 months.
Yeah.
And so I'm sat there thinking, if they can pay that dividend for the next 18 months, you know, and they've bought oodles of shares. They've bought like half a million quid's worth each, the CFO and CEO. So there's some, you know, skin in the game for you then. I think it's actually more than that. I think it might be 400,000 the CFO or CEO have bought now. I forget, they had two tranches at it. And they've bought a hell of a lot of shares anyway, and it's big skin in the game. And, you know, the chart, this chart doesn't show the bowl so much, but that is actually, when you actually look at it at the moment, unless it's gone down dramatically today, let me have a look, where are we? That's down 2.5 pence. There's still a lovely bowl forming just down there. You can see that, that sort of...
Yeah. Yes. Do you want a shorter one? Or, you know, I've got a 3-month chart.
Yeah, no, probably a bit, you want a bit longer. Let me just have a look what I've got on my one here. Let's have a look. You've got logarithmic on yours, I think. And,
yeah, sorry. Yeah, I have, yeah.
If you kill that logarithmic, can you do that or not?
You can, but I can't. I'm rubbish. Okay, right, I'm a technophile. Anyway,
if you look back to the probably just the shares have dropped down and over the past, well, at least since November, it's pretty much made a decent bottom there. So you can see there's not much difference between the lows there. Where these lows all the way down the chart up until November, and the last two bottoms in January and last week, or you know, the end of February, are pretty much on the same sort of level. So if that doesn't go through those two lows there, you're probably on the chart's probably on its way back up. But again, you know, there's a lot of small cap fund managers, small caps ain't having a good time at the moment. So that suggests that small caps are going to turn around. When you look at the AIM index, I thought the AIM index was making a bowl a few months ago, and then it's sort of like it's fallen through there. So people have shunted the AIM index again, which won't have done any help for Lion Trust's chart. But, you know, like I say, 17% yield is one of those ones you don't often see 17% yields actually come with anything, do you? You normally a 70% yield, you say to yourself, that's going to get halved at some point or whatever. They're going to cut the dividend and that. If they halve it, you've still got a decent yield. You know, if they chopped it by 60%, you've got a decent yield there still. And, you know, does it return? You know, you might not have done bad anyway. And if that dividend does come good and they do manage to maintain that dividend, well, blimey, that's going to go up. You know, like nobody's business if we're going to get a recovery in the markets, and especially in small caps.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a risky one, but it's a risky one where the directors are showing their faith and putting money in it, and the chart's looking good, and it just depends what the economies do. If we are, you know, if we go into a recession and inflation takes off and they have to raise interest rates, probably they're going to struggle. But if we do avoid all that and we turn to decent growth, blimey, it's one of those ones. So I'm holding them, so we'll see.
Yeah, but I think when it comes to sort of active fund managers, you've got to get the inflows coming into the actual company, and the way to do that is to effectively recruit some really good investors. So, Richard, if you own shares, drop them a note, because if you became a fund manager for them, they'd see a significant uptick in performance of their funds. Which should hopefully then actually drop through into the bottom line for them. But they do need people fully like you, mate.
I don't even fully understand how these things are structured. So funds like this are normally out of my investment range. But the dividend and everything I've seen here, having watched the presentation, it's just actually falling into where I think I've got to hold some of them, but. Normally I don't go big on funds. I always think if you can't make better money than the funds yourself, don't bother. You know, why bother with funds if you can do that well?
They're geared.
That's the only good thing about them. They're quite geared, so they can often beat you at times.
Yeah. Well, that's why they need you to deliver that alpha. Right. Let's move to another one. Anyway, construction. We've got piling firm, specialist geotechnics business, Keller, which grew out of its heartland in the UK, but has been booming out in the States because it's all things infrastructure. They're doing piling for new data centers, silicon chip factories, infrastructure, you name it, they're doing this piling for, and the shares have really taken off.
You know, I looked at this last week and I thought to myself, these are just cheap. They're just, you know, I think the PE is something like 6.5.
Yeah, 7, and,
and I don't think their debt is, you know, they've got next to no debt. Have they net debt?
Yeah, that's right. Basically, yeah, effect, what is it? It's only 30 million, which is like a 10% of their EBITDA. Nothing.
So, and I looked at this and I just thought, I've mentioned this one just for the sake of, you know, the last time when they actually surprised everybody, probably about a year ago, and I was buying Kia, and then suddenly these come out and said, oh, we're doing great too. And off they shot. And they went absolutely bananas. That big straight line one there in May, that was like a, you know, the big surprise one. And then it's had another few runs up, yeah, all the way along. So the upside surprises have really caught people out, and the shares have rocketed. And I think they're probably, people have sort of like said to themselves now, oh, it's not going to do that again. And in fairness, the earnings rate probably will tail off compared to how much it was growing before. But it just looks, I just thought, I read these last week and I just thought to myself, they're cheap. You know, they just look a decent price for a decent business that's doing things that it seems to be doing right and going in the right direction. And well, the charts come off from £17 to £13, and you know,
yeah,
this like is a lot of these construction. A lot of these construction companies like Kia and Galliford Try and all these other ones, you know, they're all doing quite well. You know, these would be in amongst it as well. So it's just
they're a higher quality. That they're a higher quality than the contractors. Their EBIT margins are 7%, and I would say this is a bet on Trump because it's make America great again. As he basically brings back, reshores in manufacturing, data centers, and all that kind of stuff. Then these are a natural beneficiary of it.
Yeah. And you know, maybe people thought they're doing business in America, they're going to be subject to tariffs or whatever, but I don't know. You know, it's hard to explain, but sometimes you just see something. Last week they come out with a statement and I just thought, do you know what? That looks cheap to me, and that would be a bad one to be holding, but it's probably not a, you know, like one of these super growth things that I'm after, but it just looks, an interesting company.
Yeah, no, I think it's another really good stock idea for people to have a look at. Right, we've got a final audience user question or person question. We've got Truss, he's asking about Bloomsbury Publishing, which came out of the sort of the classic sort of Harry Potter book series. It basically publishes books and stuff, but has now moved heavily into sort of commercial as well, and has some other rock style sort of like writers and stuff on its books. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever had a look at Bloomsbury at all. The shares have done very well, actually.
Yeah, I held it. I held it a little while back when they got a Chinese writer who went on to Netflix. I forget his name. It's a strange Chinese name. And I don't think anybody knows how to pronounce it, to be honest. Even Bloomsbury, they sometimes seem to pronounce two different ways. And they've got a good American writer. So it's all down to these writers that they get. You know, if you get one of these writers that has they were born out of, you know, their real thing was J.K. Rowling, weren't it?
And, yes, that's right.
Yeah, so, you know, you get another J.K. Rowling, or you have a series like Harry Potter, and you can find someone who does that. But people are quite fickle. You know, they find a new writer now, and they like them, and they're all excited by them. And then suddenly they find somebody else online that they like. And so it's how long do these writers last? I still think they're really cheap. They seem to be doing everything right still, and they're pretty decent value. They've got a fantastic history. If you look back at their history, it's a constant like 10, 15, 20% growth that they've had over the course of time. So people just sort of think books, you know, do people buy as many books, or do we read stuff online? But it's all the Netflix stuff that spins off from this as well. They don't benefit from the Netflix as far as the film goes. They benefit that they get the spin-offs in book sales. If you get a movie or a series of movies, one great movie comes on Netflix, and then people say to themselves, right, okay, I'll go out and buy that book. Oh, I like the book. I'll buy the whole set of books and read all the books, because they know they're coming along and they've read the book before the film actually comes onto the telly. So, and you know, Netflix and Amazon and all these others are so much after, you know, content now, that one of these book writers gets a Netflix deal, it makes a great difference to Bloomsbury. So I think they're probably still a good buy at the moment, even at this price where they've gone up. I think they're due a trade. Their trading update's quite soon, isn't it? I think they've just recently said.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah, it looks, you know, it's a class act, and
they don't really put a foot wrong, really. And the guy that started it, I forget his name now as well.
Nigel somebody.
He's been there for ages, and he knows the game inside out.
Yeah,
and.
I think it's Nigel Newton, I think his name is. But he might give you a tap on the shoulder there, Richard, to ask him for a Cockney Rebel trilogy of books to come out about your investing career, because I think that would sell well.
Yeah. He'd be in the bargain basement.
Oh, right, I got real
fight. At the works, every game at 20 pence at the works.
Right, final question. I'll ask everybody, all these sort of like the expert investors, what's your sort of your favourite sort of like stock idea for the rest of the year for 2025? Given your success, that is a high bar, actually, Richard. So no pressure here.
My favourite, do you know what? I think it's really difficult. For absolute excitement, I'd probably say Audio Boom.
Yeah, okay.
Possibly for absolute excitement. For one that I think no one is off the radar, Watkin Jones. For people, you know, ignoring something and suddenly, you know, it's not on the radar. Audio Boom's on the radar. People know about it. But that could be really exciting. Watkin Jones is one that I think people haven't caught up with. You know, the tip sheets haven't caught it and sort of stuff like that. And I think few months down the line, the tipsters will probably wake up to it. And, you know, that could be really, you know, what's it off its chart now? I think they're trading at about, at the moment, 30 pence. I think they're about £1.80 or something. At some point, when you go back on the chart,
they were over 10 quid.
Their sales are probably going to be up with where they were now. It's just a matter of just getting those margins right. A new CFO, if they can just sort the margins out there, and this cladding lark is starting to, you know, drift away now. So probably I'd say that's one of the ones that people have missed. And although a lot of people did pile in when they saw those results, that went up for days on end, and it was on massive volume. But interestingly, look, just recently, a little pullback. It's been on no volume at all, hardly. I sit there and watch 20% normal daily volume go through, and the shares have ticked off a tiny little bit. And yet when it was going up, it was 1,000, 1,200 times daily volume. Yeah. So a lot of people were piling in big, and I think they saw what I saw as well. So we'll see going down the line. But, yeah, there'd be the two, I'd say. Real fizz from Audio Boom and unexpected fizz from Watkin Jones.
Brilliant. Well, I'll keep an eye on all those. And thank you very much for all those stock ideas, Richard. Lots of things for people to get their teeth into there. Thanks, everyone, for your questions. And best of luck with your returns and your portfolio for the rest of the year. So thanks again, Richard.
Yeah. Pleasure. Nice to see you. Bye, everyone.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.